Good morning. Welcome to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine. And this week, we're going to talk about gardening and health. My guest is prolific author Maggie Stuckey. She's the author of 11 books, most on gardening, including the latest book, not on gardening, Soup Night. Welcome, Maggie.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yes. So we're going to talk today at the intersection between health and gardening and community, some things that you've written about.
Yes.
Well, let's start with, some of those intangible things that we get from being out in the yard.
Yeah. Well, I have a particular focus on growing edible plants.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I think about is, when you make a meal out of something that you've grown in your own garden, it has an extra value somehow. It just feels more nutritious. It feels healthier. It feels like you worked hard to get this in your soup pot. You worked hard to get this in your salad bowl. And it just feels more special somehow.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, there's the whole area of when you grow it yourself, you know what's in it. You know what you did. You know whether you used organic fertilizer or the other kind. You know whether you were in a position where you had to use some pesticides at some point. You know all that. And we, fortunately, there's so many wonderful products available now. We all have choices about how we want to do that. I have a garden in Ocean Park across the river on the peninsula, and I, after 3 years, I'm still negotiating with the deer what they'll let me have, which is okay. They were there first. but aside from, God's creatures like that that want to come and eat our lettuce, we do have control over what we put in our mouth and what we put in our bodies. That's a pretty amazing thing.
Mm-hmm. We have a small herd of deer that regularly visit our yard, and there are things I let them have, and the things I don't want them to have are caged or covered with bird netting. We're doing very well this year with keeping them out of the things that we are very set about. They are not going to eat all the peas. So they're all completely enmeshed in a bird netting, and they don't like the bird netting. We're getting to eat all the blueberries this year because they're all covered. For some reason, there are no strawberries this year.
I had the same problem, and I thought it was because I wasn't here to water adequately. But in any case, what I don't understand is why we can't train the deer to eat the dandelions. I mean, they got those pretty little yellow flowers and nutritious leaves.
And they like bitter leaves.
So why don't they eat my dandelions and leave my hosta alone?
Oh, yeah. They like hostas, don't they?
I know.
They don't eat my hostas because they have so much else to eat.
Ah. So they come around and they say, thank you, Ange.
Right. They can eat the roses, although I have this bank of rugosa roses that they don't go near at all. But the hybrid teas, have at it. They're trying to get... Well, they don't like the artichoke.
Ha-ha. Yeah, because it's so prickly.
Well, but they don't even eat the leaf.
Oh.
But, they apparently in different people's yards, they eat different things.
Yeah.
They were right by the front, by the kitchen. One of them was eating peach leaves the other day.
Huh.
Fortunately, the peaches were too high. But, they'll get up on their hind legs get higher.
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah. I've been just surprised, kind of trying to think in my mind what logically seems like that would be attractive to them and what wouldn't. And I'm always surprised. I put in some agapanthus, and I thought to myself, that was foolish. It's right at their height. It's a beautiful blue color. They're going to love it. They're not interested at all.
Oh. Wow.
So who knows? Who knew?
Yeah.
It's an ongoing adventure, me and the deer.
Right. So I suppose there are other things that we get I mean, there's got to be better nutrition when you eat something that you just pick and eat.
Right then and there, yeah. Anything in the grocery store, even very well-equipped markets, has at least been there 24 hours. And sometimes it gets trucked in from, you know, several hundred miles away and then goes to a warehouse and sits in the warehouse cooler for a while and eventually gets on another truck and gets to the grocery store. There's all of that. Also, I was thinking about lettuce because I have wonderful lettuce in my garden in Portland. I live by myself. When you buy a whole head of lettuce at the store, it turns to slime before you can use it all up. But when you have it in the garden, you just go out and pick a few leaves here and a few out of there, and then it keeps on growing. So 3 days from now, you can go and do it again. And
you know, I've got a house full of people, and it's still, we have these three, just three, but we have these three huge heads of lettuce.
Yeah.
And I am sure they're going to get bitter before, you know, before we've eaten them up. Yeah. And, well, I should plant some more. Do you think it's too hot to get another crop of lettuce in?
Hard to tell. But this is one of the things that I think I'd like people to sort of expand their thinking a little bit, is why not give it a try?
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to lose, you know?
Well, you know, lettuce seeds are teeny, cheap.
Right, yeah. right. And so you devote maybe one square foot to lettuce plants and see what happens.
Right.
That's one of the lessons that I learned from gardening is the value of being flexible.
Mm-hmm.
You see this beautiful, we're all subject to temptation, nursery temptation, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Go to the nursery, see these beautiful stuff. You want one of everything. I want that, I want that, I want mm-hmm. that, I want that. Mm-hmm. And you come home and then you have to plant them.
And I always run into the, oh God, I have nowhere for that.
Yeah.
When that thing gets full size, it's going to be impossible.
I know. So then you, I do this a lot. I put something where I think it will do well and it doesn't thrive. And so I move it, dig it mm-hmm. up next year, move it up. Sorry, dig it up, move it to someplace else. And maybe it'll do better.
I think being willing to do that, it's really, it's really good. I have trouble with that.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't want to move it, but I don't know where to move it to.
Plants are a lot tougher than we give them credit for most of the time. I mean, they really are.
Mm-hmm.
I get a great deal of satisfaction out of thinking, well, shoot, let's just try it over here and see what happens. What's the worst that could happen is it would
die.
Well, that would be the worst, and that would be too bad. But more likely, the next worst thing is that it would just stay there. It wouldn't thrive. So in year three, I'll try it in a different place still. Give yourself the freedom to be a little flexible about that, and you can. I think people are often surprised at how nice things turn out. Because the other wonderful thing to think about is that plants are reliable. And what I mean by that is, particularly thinking about edible plants now, you remember that musical, The Fantastics, and there's a song in it called, plant a radish, get a radish, da-da-da. the plants do what God intended them to do. I was at a gathering once several years ago, and there were several master gardeners there. And a couple of them worked on the telephone line where people call in with questions. And so they were regaling us with the unusual questions that people ask sometimes. And one caller said, what do I get when I plant carrot seeds? And the master gardener volunteer said, well, generally speaking, you'll get carrots. So the other thing that is that plants do what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, they'll give you a surprise, but mm-hmm. your peach trees are not going to suddenly start producing apples. You know, you can plan on a degree of certainty
mm-hmm.
that helps keep life under control when so much of it's uncertain.
Especially if you buy seeds that are in packets.
Mm-hmm.
That they're going to be what they're pretty much they're going to be what they say, and again there are There are times when that's not true. But if you're going to plant your own seeds, and especially if they're in a squash family, you might not get what you thought.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if it's in if it's a hybrid.
Right, right. And then that's the adventure of it.
That's true.
You have to be willing to be surprised.
Right. The thing that's not edible, but it's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That squash gourd thing that's the wrong shape and the wrong color compared to what you were hoping to have a zucchini.
Right.
So we've got zucchini now.
Yeah.
Already. I mean, I think for us, this is really early.
It is. It's early anywhere. Yeah.
So we're chugging along. Our tomatoes are insane.
Ah.
The majority of them in the greenhouse, they are already close to 6 feet tall.
Wow.
Big leaves setting. They're set, starting to set.
Right, right.
So this is a good year.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
No green tomato year this year, huh?
Well, I don't, you know, you never know what might happen. But if you start this early, I think they'll have enough heat days to get get right.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing about having dirt under your fingernails, digging in the dirt, is it is a way that those of us in urban settings can still sort of feel connected to nature, to growing things. I mean, it's such a miracle. Think about almost everything that we, all the fruits and vegetables that we eat have seeds inside. I mean, think cantaloupe, for example. Picture how many seeds there are in one cantaloupe. Just one of those seeds, under the right conditions, has the potential to make a whole new plant with maybe 15 or 20 more cantaloupes on it. I mean, when you think about it that way, it's a wonder the world isn't overrun with cantaloupes. But the point is that this little tiny seed is such a miracle. When you think about it, it's just unbelievable what the potential that it has inside. And it sort of helps me think about looking for the potential in everything, you know, being kind of opening up your eyes a little bit and seeing the world. A lot of good stuff happened in this world last week. Some of us never thought we'd see. And it confirms to me that that there's good stuff around if we're willing to open up our eyes and look a little harder. Mm-hmm. And then I think about all these things when I'm out on my hands and knees digging in the dirt. And it's easy to go from a little tomato plant to thinking about what you need to do to nourish that plant, to nourish then a child, to nourish a whole neighborhood, to nourish a whole community, a whole nation. And then I say, you're getting a little carried away here, kid. But it's fun to think about those things when you're down in the dirt and the birds are singing and the sun is shining and it's a happy place to be.
Mm-hmm. It is. I find that, you know, one of the things I love to do when I'm gardening is, you know, listen to the radio. Mm. And, but I'm sitting there and I smell the dirt. And one of my favorite smells is that rain when the grass is drying up. I don't know what it is. It's sort of a brown smell. Mm-hmm. But it's not the dirt. It's the grass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love that smell, and we had it the other day. Mm-hmm. I love being outside in the garden. And I like pulling weeds. People think I'm nuts, but I love it.
You want to come over to my house later?
You know, it's a project that's never done, no matter how much, you know, how much space you have or how little space you have. I suppose if I had a couple of pots, if I ever get down to just having a container garden on the deck, that I might be done.
Yeah.
But as long as you have outside, you'll never be done.
I know. I'm not making a joke out of it all because I know exactly what you mean. Because that is a task that when you're done, you can see what you've accomplished. It's very tangible. It's very visible. Most of us, or many of us, have jobs where that's not the case. At the end of the day, you can't point to something literal and physical and tangible that you actually accomplished. I used to love mowing the grass, because for that very reason. You know, it's hard work, but when it's done, you can see what you did.
Mm-hmm. And it always looks better.
And then I moved into a condominium, and I thought, I bet you I'm going to miss mowing the grass. Well, guess what? I don't miss it.
Oh, God. We're back. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Maggie Stuckey, and we're talking about gardening and health and what's healthy about gardening and what's healthy about being in the garden. And gardening is the number one hobby in the United States. And
it absolutely is.
And we probably spend, well, we do. We spend millions of dollars gardening between buying plants, soil amendments, chemicals, whatever, you know, going to farmers markets and getting baby starts. And it definitely is a great joy, the whole picking out plants. And I'm in a phase right now where I want to build a new bed. I went, as I try to do every year, to Shriner's Iris Nursery. Mm-hmm. Yes. North of Salem.
Right.
They open, I think, for their show gardens and their whole big, you know, summer thing on Mother's Day and go until it's done. And when I was walking around their beds, I saw them in a new way, which was a lot of the beds, not the long ones, but the other littler beds were round with a small, some kind of a tree in the middle, small tree, surrounded by a flock of one kind of iris, all in bloom at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they're doing it to show you this is what this thing looks like. But I was thinking, I would like to build a bed like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, well, that's an awful lot of one thing to put in. But I could put it. Do half, mm-hmm. half with one and half the mm-hmm. other. Anyway, I'm thinking about where that's going to be. I think some more lawn is disappearing. I think my husband's going to have another fit, taking out more of the lawn. The lawn is like going away piece by piece.
Yeah.
And of course, it's good to be getting rid of the lawn and putting it into productive use. We have three new garden beds for vegetables where lawn used to be.
Yeah.
And that's much preferable.
Yeah. Another thing that we might talk about a little bit is introducing children to gardening. I particularly have experience with my niece and nephew when they were really little. I once asked my nephew Sam went through a phase where he didn't want any vegetables at all. I said, Sam, do you like anything green? And he said, yes, apples. But I had sugar snap peas growing. And at the time, I lived in a house with a porch, and they were planted in the ground. And, you know, it takes about 2 or 3 feet of vine before the peas actually set. So when you're standing on the porch, you're actually at the level where the peas are starting to show up. And he would stand there and eat everything that he could reach, just cramming them into his mouth and loving it. And I'm standing back thinking, okay, I got this kid to eat some vegetables, you know. But when they grow them themselves and actually see, you put a little radish seed in, the radishes are good because they germinate so fast,
mm-hmm.
and kids can actually see what they've done. Can see that it actually does work. I mean, you hear people talk about all the time, kids think, go to the supermarket and they think that milk comes into the world in plastic jugs. They can't make the connection between that and a cow. we can do the same thing with vegetables, you know. It comes off, this cherry tomato comes off of this plant. And it comes off this plant because you put it in the ground with your own hands. And you've been watering it all along. And don't they taste great? And these kids just get this big beam smile. It's just, it's lovely to watch them.
I got this little, I won a raffle at the Lower Columbia Preservation Society's garden tour last year. That was this frame. It's kind of a window frame with glass, with this trough and with mesh on the edges. And I planted some Tokyo cross turnips, little teeny turnip, in a row across there. And it's been a blast. But I have to water it multiple times a day because it's a really dry, it dries out really bad. Anyway, I've got turnips now that are ready to harvest in, I don't know, I think they're like 30-day things. And I think they actually taste better than radishes. They're not, you know, they're not spicy, or they're not very spicy. And they're delicious. They're sweet. I mean, the problem with radishes is they're spicy, and kids don't like spicy. But they're cool for a visual. But there are other things that are quick.
Right.
God, what else is like 30 days?
Well, a lot of the greens are, the salad greens and the lettuces. And
that's true.
And I, you know, I think kids really like salads if you put a lot of good stuff in it and give them their choice of dressing and stuff. But they just get so excited about seeing it actually happen.
So do I.
Yeah, well, so do I. Me too. And I really love the fact that, you know, with all the stuff that they have in their lives and all the electronics and all the gadgets, that you can get them turned on to, you know, growing beans.
Instead of a virtual growing beans.
Right.
Yeah. And I found that I've got some great kale, really chunky dinosaur kale. Can take two spears of that, put it in a smoothie. It looks green, but it tastes like the strawberry and the banana that are in it. And it's a great way to get more veggies into our lives.
Right.
Without, you know, you don't have to cook it, and there it is.
Right.
So let's talk about soup night.
Well, that's a good way to get vegetables into your kids. But, you know, fill up
a soup pot. Or your spouse.
Fill up a pot with vegetables. And, you know, I enjoy it. The intersection for me is the stuff from your garden that you grew yourself and you know exactly what you did to it or didn't do to it comes into your kitchen, gets washed, chopped up, goes into your soup pot. So there's an absolute direct connection between your labor in the garden and your healthy body, because you're putting healthy stuff into it. Soup night, as a concept, is a way for people who don't know each other to become acquainted, with the goal of establishing some sense of community among themselves. It's often a neighborhood event, although sometimes it's the group has a different common thread, but neighborhoods are most common. And what I've observed, both when I originally did the research for the book, and then I've found a lot of other soup nights since then, including yours, which I hope you'll tell us a little bit about, is that people absolutely love the fact that they now know their neighbors. I am so deep into this that I'm still astonished by the fact that in most parts of the country, you can live two houses away from somebody and not even know their name. It is so common, it just blows my mind to think that. But in places where they do a soup night, they have completely wiped out that sense of separateness and replaced it with a sense of togetherness, so that when somebody's in trouble, when there's a medical emergency, they've got help instantly. When somebody needs to borrow a special tool that they don't have, they know exactly where to go. And the book that I wrote centers around a specific neighborhood. this happens to be the street my brother lives on, and there's this one gentleman there who said to me, when I interviewed everybody on that block separately, and he said to me, my garage is open all the time, and everybody knows it, and if they need something, they come and get it, and then they bring it back. Now think about that. This is in Portland, a big city. He makes it known that his garage is unlocked and that the stuff in it is available for borrowing, and nothing has ever disappeared. Nobody has ever done anything but be grateful and look for a way to pay that back somehow or other, you know. They have this unbelievable aura of kindness and goodwill that just sort of goes around. Mm. It's amazing
that,
stuff.
That's delightful.
And that's what happens. In the book, I have stories of about 30 groups all around the country, and they all said the same thing. It makes our neighborhood like a small town, like the small town from the 1950s, where mm-hmm. everybody knew everybody and helped each other out and took care of each other and watched out for each other. It's absolutely great.
Well, that is exactly what we're seeing in our neighborhood. We started in December? Yes, our first soup night was in December. And we have commitments of houses to continue through December.
Oh, wonderful.
And so we booked out the whole, you know, rest of the year, accommodating for special. We picked a particular Sunday evening.
Right.
And we've gone off of that, like for Scandinavian Festival, the sure. people that we're doing now, they're involved with that. That wasn't going to be a good weekend. So we moved it. And it's been changing, and I would really like more of the neighbors to come, and it's interesting who comes. There's a core group
right.
that are pretty devoted.
Right.
And we've been working on neighborhood emergency preparedness.
Yes.
Which has been really interesting, talking about one of our members is getting these placards to have in the house that have things like what to have on hand, but also have a sign
in the window
that says safe or they're yeah. fine or right. need help.
Right.
And we've all agreed that we're gonna have some kind of an yeah. organized system like that. And
that's a great vehicle for soup nights. That's a good thing to be doing, you know, tie those two things together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. And it's been great getting to know everyone. So now when we see each other out on the walk,
right.
you know, it's not just hi.
Yeah.
You know, we have something to talk about.
Right. Right,
and
right,
yeah,
right.
Our relationships are becoming deeper, and it's wonderful.
It is wonderful, and it's so simple. It is sometimes people say to me, I'm afraid of making soup. Isn't it hard? And I think, nothing is simpler. Nothing is easier than soup. As you, no matter what you put in there, it's going to taste great.
Right.
Besides which, the soup isn't really the point. The point is getting together and getting to know each other and basking in this wonderful sense of community.
That is so true. And the soups have all been fabulous. So
good.
It's
good.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much, Maggie.
My pleasure.
It's been a blast. And where are your books available?
Well, at Lucy's Books here in town, mm-hmm. Beach Books down in the Seaside, Time Enough Books over in Ilwaco and up in Adelaide's. And also, I'm going to be appearing at the Clatsop County Fair. Lucy's Books is sponsoring an author table, and I'm going to be there on Saturday, which is August the 1st, with several of my books that people can take a look at and buy an autographed copy.
How fun. That is great.